This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at Reach 2022, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders Educational Programs on March 24 and 25, 2022, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Welcome, everyone. I'm glad you all could come in here. For you that don't use, that don't have handouts, if I get some more, I'll try to get them to you. We are excited to have Jean here to speak with us. Jean Nisley is married to Josh Nisley, and Josh teaches at Faith Builders Training Institute and the Christian School. They live in Meadville with their three children, Harper, George, and Cadman. They lived in Israel for 3 years, and Jean will be speaking from their experience there. This has inspired her passion for all unseen workers to understand that God's eyes remember them, whether they sense it or not. With that, I'll turn the time over to you.
Good morning. I am delighted to be here, and I am delighted with all of you who are here. Some of you I know, some of you I don't. But I really would love to hear your story, your history. Have you served in a foreign context? Are you currently serving in a foreign context? Are you planning to go? So many questions I would have. Or maybe you just have experienced hiddenness in your life. Maybe you're currently in a time of hiding, of shadows. I'd love to know why you picked this session. What about you and your history draws you to this subject? I'm afraid we don't have time. I'm afraid I have a lot to say, and I hope you don't feel like you're at the end of a fire hydrant this morning. But I would like to invite you, if you remember my face and want to find me at some point this weekend, I would love to hear your story and hear just a little bit about you. I'd like to start by asking you a question. Does God care about measuring cups? And you might say, what an absolutely silly question. On one hand, it is. But I'd like to tell you a little story that might help us to answer that question. So, as Sarah mentioned, we served in Israel, Jerusalem, Israel, for 3 years. And I'll talk a little bit more, give a little more background on that later. But we were there for maybe 2 weeks, and I was scouring Jerusalem for measuring cups. And I was looking for, like, the glass, the Pyrex, the really sturdy measuring cup. And absolutely couldn't find it. So I asked Ilana Graber. Donovan and Ilana were a couple, a family that had been there for several years before we came. So she knew the place a lot better than I did. And she suggested that I check at a store called Big Deal Store. The store was along a street, she told me, called Jaffa Street, which I was familiar with at that point. It was basically like a main place to shop. It had tons of little stores and restaurants. I'm guessing maybe a mile long. So it was a long ways to walk, and it was my favorite shopping place. So I went there and walked and walked and walked and could not find this store. So I just started praying. I was like, Lord, I really want to find this store. Please help me. So as I was walking, I came to a little side street, and along this main Jaffa Street, there's tons of little side streets going off. But I was pretty sure that Ilana had meant that it was along the main stretch, so I was sticking to that. But I came to a little side street, and for whatever reason, I felt this urge to go down it. And I was like, okay, I'll walk down this street. And I thought, as I was walking, I thought, this is absolutely stupid, because I am not going to check every little side street. And on the heels of that thought, I looked up, and there was my Big Deal store. And it shocked me so badly. I just remember thinking, I know there's going to be a measuring cup in that store. So I went in, I went up to the second level where they had the kitchen stuff, and there on the shelf, there was one more Anchor Hawking 2-cup glass measuring cup. And you better believe I snatched that thing up and went home a very happy woman. So yes, God cares about measuring cups, but I would like to suggest that he cared more in that moment about revealing that his eyes were upon me. He cares about revealing his eyes upon you. I don't know what your wonderings include, maybe not measuring cups, but I'm sure they include lots of little things. Maybe you wonder, does God see that I'm cleaning up the same mess again? Water, milk, snot, poop, if you're a mom. Does he know about that misunderstanding that no one else seems to have noticed? Does he know that I use Huggies brand diapers for my baby instead of Pampers? Does he know how absolutely exhausted I get at times? You fill in the blank. How involved really is God in the minutiae of your lives? We live probably 1,000 unseen moments every day, unseen by people. So like I said, we were in Israel from January 2015 to January 2018 under Christian Aid Ministries. We had been asked to go to fill in for Donovan and Ilana. Like I said, they had been there about 7 years, I think, and their visas were running out, and they needed someone to fill in for them until they came back. They were actually not sure if they could come back, but that was the hope. So we went indefinitely. Josh primarily had an administrative role there, so he was in the office a lot. I was basically along for the ride, honestly. I didn't have any specific responsibilities. I was feeling very thankful. I had, about a year and a half prior, I had come through a stem cell transplant because of my history with Hodgkin's lymphoma. And so I felt very thankful that a mission would even consider sending someone like me, who was still in a lot of ways recovering from that. We lived in the old city of Jerusalem, which is an extremely crowded, I think less than a square kilometer, 30,000 people living in the old city. So very, very cramped. There were four quarters, and we lived in the Arab Christian quarter. For the staff wives, we were a small team, and for the staff wives, there were different opportunities that we could be involved in. Christian Aid Ministries in Israel is primarily a humanitarian aid program there. So we partnered with other ministries in Israel. So there was like a crisis pregnancy center there that we partnered with. There were opportunities that we could get involved there. As staff wives, there wasn't anything I was specifically pursuing at the beginning other than language learning, which is a feat all in itself. And so I was basically there as a wife. And if you've been in any position similar to this, you know that the novelty of service wears off quickly and you find yourself dealing with the petty and wondering, does God see me? And does he care? Does he actually have a purpose for what I'm doing? And does that purpose go beyond the petty and the mundane? And what if it doesn't? We've all had experiences in which we felt unseen. It doesn't matter what role you're filling. We have all had those experiences. And I'd like you to take your handouts that you have and look at the first activity there. I would like you to write down a time in which you felt unseen. Now, this can be a memory that you have of a specific incident or moment. It can be a time frame of your life in which you felt hidden. And no one is going to see this but you, unless you choose to share it. So be as personal as you want. You can just write a word that helps you remember what it was, if you care to, or a couple sentences. And if you don't have a paper, I apologize. I guess just reflect on this. You can take more time later, another time when you're by yourself and reflecting, if you haven't finished. At the beginning here, I'd like to propose two universal human desires that we have in relation to being seen. We long to be known for who we are. I'm pretty sure that no matter what personality you have, no matter where you find yourself, no matter what role you play, you long to be known. You long to be seen by being known. And secondly, we long to be recognized for what we do. I felt both of these desires very strongly in my time there, particularly there in Israel. And I believe these desires are natural and God-given. They're probably most overtly evident in children. I don't know how many times my kids have said, "Mom, look, look, Mom." It's countless, and it gets so old. But what they are shouting is, look, look what, it might be something they accomplished, something they built, something they drew, a stunt they're performing. And I think what they're shouting is, I want to be noticed. I want to be affirmed as your child. We are no different. We do the exact same thing. Our lives are shouting, look, look. And again, these desires to be seen are not wrong. I believe they are God-given, but we are fools if we think that those desires cannot go wrong. We've probably all seen examples of them gone wrong. We've probably all lived examples of them gone wrong. We know that just because we have a God-given desire does not mean it will automatically be pointed in the right direction. And it is no different with the desire to be seen. So what does it look like, this desire, when it goes wrong? If I were to put one word to it, it would be pride. It's pretty simple. It's when we seek for recognition and honor and affirmation and dignity from our fellow human beings. Sometimes I'm tempted to think that the answer is about managing my pride. I just won't think about my accomplishments too much. Or I'll think about others a little bit more than myself. And I've found those exercises to be kind of like a band-aid. It really does not heal the pride. I would like to suggest that the answer is orienting your eyes and your awareness to the one who made you and knows you and sees everything about you. The goal is not to be rid of the desire to be seen. The goal is to seek its fulfillment in the right place. I'd like to introduce this book to you called Unseen by Sarah Haggerty. The subtitle is The Gift of Being Hidden in a World That Loves to Be Noticed. I highly recommend this book on this subject. Fantastic job by Sarah in just giving her own story of hiddenness and how she found God in that. She calls hiddenness actually an invitation. We are invited into hiding. She makes it compelling. I'd like to read just a little bit from here to give you just a little taste of it. She says, "The truth is we are made by God to be seen and celebrated. We like to hear our own names. When we're noticed and affirmed for our accomplishments or character traits, we feel that internal sigh of satisfaction that says, 'Yes, I matter,' to someone. It's God who gives us this craving to be known, to realize that we do matter. We mattered before anyone else knew us, before we even had breath. David knew this, for you formed my inward parts, you covered me in my mother's womb. We were conceived and we grew in hiddenness. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in secret and skillfully wrought in the lowest parts of the earth. Yet even in our natal hiddenness, we had a set of eyes on us. We lived for that one set of eyes. Your eyes saw my substance being yet unformed. Even as we are known, we are nonetheless born into hiding. God saw us when we could not be seen, writes Charles Spurgeon, and he wrote about us when there was nothing of us to write about. For the 9 months we are encased in the womb, unseen even by the eyes of the woman whose body labors to give us life, we grow from the size of a seed to that of a watermelon. Unseen, we grow about 1,600 times larger than the tiny union of cells we started out as. And in that secret place, we are incubated, hand hidden, known, witnessed, concealed. Within the hiddenness of the womb, God gives us a glimpse of a forever truth, the truth that quickens and multiplies in secret. The problem is not that we long for significance, but that we are shifty or misguided in where we look for it. When we crave most the eyes of others, their opinions and accolades, we break our gaze with the only eyes that will ever truly see us. We forget the beauty of the Creator eyes turned toward us, the ones that saw the inception of our lives and loved what He saw. We're still hungry for the thing for which we were made, to be seen, to be known, to be celebrated, to participate in something much larger than ourselves. But too often we settle for lesser things. It seems easier to get a like online than it does to get quiet before God, to seek His face and listen for His whispers, especially if we're not sure what the expression on His face might be or whether His whispers will be kind. We wonder if God could ever like what He sees in us when no one is looking. And we forget that it was in that same hiddenness that ourselves took shape in the first place. Scripture has something to say about hiddenness as well. I think of the story of the widow and her two mites, her two coins. I'm guessing that more people than Jesus saw her, but I'm guessing that nobody else understood. Jesus saw her, and he knew. He not only saw her, but he knew that that was the last of what she had. In Matthew 6, Jesus says, "When you give, don't let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. When you pray, go into your closet. When you fast, anoint your head and wash your face." And for all three of those times, he says, "And your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you." His eyes are on us. If you'll look at your sheets on the second, your handouts on the second activity there, we're not going to do this in the session here, but at some point I would challenge you to think back to that moment of silence that you recorded, or that time frame of hiddenness in your life, and just take some time to reflect and be aware of God's eyes on you. Where was He in that moment, in that time frame? And how does the awareness of His presence change your view of that hidden moment? There are many ways to be hidden. There are many places to be hidden. I will be exploring just two from my own experience this morning. Probably one of the most common places of hiddenness for us women is in the home. That is the first one that I want to talk about, serving in the shadows of a home. I will be shifting just a little bit from the theme of hiddenness to the theme of making a home away from home, although it all is intertwined. And before I talk about my experience, I'd like you to, on your handouts, just jot down several words that first come to your mind when you think of the word home. What do you associate with home? Does anyone care to share some?
Many.
Many. Good.
Chaotic.
Chaotic. Someone else was saying so.
Safe.
Safe. Mm-hmm.
Togetherness.
Togetherness.
Love.
Loved.
My workplace.
Your workplace, yes. Good.
Foundation for life.
Foundation for life. I thought about three, and I tried making them all start with F, so they're easy to remember. So family, food, and familiarity, or comfort. And I want to just share some brief anecdotes with each of those of our time there in Israel and how I sought to bring home to that context so far away through these three areas. So for the first one, for family, you're going to need to find this in others. And that can be tricky and that can be hard. Allow yourself to need others. Often we go into service with the idea of serving, which is totally appropriate, but we need to need the people we are serving. I remember one day, so we lived in the old city, which is very cramped. We shared a tiny little courtyard with maybe five or so other households. And my neighbor lady, which we became very close, she was very sweet, had young children as well. And there was one day I was really struggling with some anxiety. And I just thought, you know what? I need to go ask Shamo to come pray with me. And I did. And it was a huge blessing. I feel like that was sort of a significant deepening point in our relationship. And we became very close. And that was a huge blessing. It's really hard to explain these stories without giving you actual visuals of what the old city looked like. But we had to walk. Our house was about 10 or 15 minute walk from the nearest gate of the old city. So you can't drive vehicles into the old city. So we had to walk. So we had to carry all our groceries in and all this. We had little pull behind carts that I would take. There were steps. Some steps had ramps, but not all of them. So you'd like manage your cart along. And by the time we had our first two children there. By the time I had my first one and was hugely pregnant with our second one, it was very difficult to lug all of that into the old city. And just down from our house, there was another really big courtyard, and there was a lady who would sit out there often, and she started just saying, "Hey, just leave your little girl with me and, you know, take up a load and come on back and get the rest." And so that's what I started doing. She was super sweet, and it helped so much. There was no way I could get my daughter and all my groceries up those steps when I was 7 months pregnant. So that was a big blessing, too. And there were times I would be carrying a lot of groceries while pregnant, and people would offer to help me. It was great. So the second area, food. If you serve in a foreign context, you will have every opportunity to be brave in this area. Try new foods. You don't have to like them. Try them. You probably will like them. Learn to cook the native food. And this is an area I wish I would have done better in, actually. I learned one dish really well from my neighbor lady in 3 years. I could have learned more. But it's a dish that I still like to make here. Introduce your own native food to the people around you. So this is kind of a funny story. I took my neighbor's taco salad one time, and this is almost completely unheard of in the Arab culture. I mean, cold meat on lettuce is really weird. But she told me later, she said her son loved it. indicating that the rest of them, you know, were a little shaky on it. But that was okay. Her son was probably 5. And he was brave enough to try something new. And he liked it. That, to me, was a success. The third area, familiarity or comfort. I just want to say with this one that it is okay to live with awkwardness. With some failure, you're going to get it wrong. Just plan for that. I think we always idealize being out of our comfort zones, but the reality can be pretty harsh sometimes. So how can you bring comfort to a place that is not your comfort zone? I'd like to suggest two things. First of all, bring your humanity. Humanity is the common denominator of all cultures. So as much as you can, bring yourself as a human. It will be understood. I don't know of any child, for example, who does not enjoy coloring, games, stories. That is one way that I connected with the children there, and especially before I had my own children. I loved children, and seeing the children out in the streets, it was a good opportunity. Secondly, bring humility. Enter a culture with the attitude of a student, not a teacher. You know, the desire, at least for me, was to go knowing all of the do's and don'ts. Just know it, right? But that's an impossible expectation. I remember having one of my native friends there, having her over one time, and I don't remember if I actually offered her a glass of water or if I just asked her if she wants some water, and she just looked at me and said, "You don't." She said, "This is just between us two." You know, they like to say that. "This is just between the two of us. But you don't ever just offer water. You need to have juice or soda or something else, you know." So that was hard to accept, but it takes humility. I'd like to shift now to the second area that I experienced hiddenness. And I have called this one serving in the shadows of others. So sometimes we find ourselves in the limelight, and sometimes we find ourselves in the shadows of others. And this talk is not about making one more noble than the other. It is important to serve where God has called you, limelight or shadows. So as I said, I was married and enabled my husband in 1,000 small and insignificant ways, ways that were as natural and bland as breathing, ways that a lot of people did not see. I didn't resent that. I was fine with that. That was great. And as time went on, I found myself almost primarily filling a role of an enabler there. And like I said, at the beginning, I wasn't pursuing anything specific. There were opportunities. I actually don't even remember why I didn't. But so a while into our time there, I was asked to accompany our physical therapist out on her days in the West Bank. Now, the West Bank is a section that is primarily occupied by Palestinian Arabs, very poor, very remote, rural. It's not really an area that you just drive into for no reason. And so, as I mentioned, Christian Aid Ministries was providing a lot of humanitarian aid in Israel. So we were privileged to have a physical therapist on our team. There is a lot of handicapped there are a lot of handicapped people there, and it's partly because of all the intermarriage. So there's lots of opportunities. We would distribute wheelchairs, things like that. So this was an amazing opportunity. I was able to get into homes that I never would have otherwise. Really, there would have been no other reason to go in. So what was my role? I was not a physical therapist. I didn't have any training in that area. I couldn't fix wheelchairs. Didn't have any training in that area. Part of the reason they wanted me to go out was just to practice the language. So in Jerusalem, a lot of people know English as well. So if you run into a problem, you can always switch to English, which honestly, in some ways, cripples you more. Out there in the West Bank, it was not so much like that. So I got to listen to Arabic all day long, which is great. It gives you a headache, but it was great. It was good practice. So most of these days, I just went one day a week. Most of these days, it was just the three of us, me, our physical therapist, Lisa, and her translator. And I enabled simply by my presence, by showing up. Really, that was the only role I had. I remember Lisa telling me different times, the days that you are with us, they just go better. And that meant a lot to me. But as time went on, I began feeling a lot of restlessness. What really was I doing? Yeah, I would go and talk to the kids. I'd hang out with them. I loved that part. But I also began to notice that I started this very dangerous game of comparisons. Our physical therapist, Lisa, was very talented. She has an amazing aptitude for language learning. And of course, she had her training, physical therapy training, so she was extremely needed there. And she was good at it. She was very good at it. And there I was, a third wheel. That's how it felt, along for the ride. And I let those comparisons start eating at me. Now, let me tell you something. If there's a chief at comparisons, it's probably me. Pretty sure. I didn't even realize until later how much pride I was dealing with and how much humility I needed. It wasn't just on these days that I felt comparisons. I felt it with the other staff ladies as well. And I started realizing it was becoming a pattern for me. Some of the other women were finding their niche and ways to be useful, and I felt like I wasn't doing enough. I wasn't important enough. I thought I needed something by which to distinguish myself, to hang my identity on. I will finish this story, but first I want to say a little bit on comparisons. I don't know how you join a small group of staff without comparing. You have different backgrounds, you have different skills, you have different abilities, you have different interests. Many, many opportunities to compare. I don't know how you sit in a circle of women week after week and hear what they've been doing and what they're up to and not compare. We're so good at it. We're so terrible at it. I don't know about you. For me, there's often a subtle lie that creeps into my mind in these times. And it is this: I'm not doing enough, or I am not enough. If you struggle with this, I challenge you to ask yourself, compared to whom? Who sets the standard of what is enough and what's not enough? I was not on the front lines. Some of the women were. And sometimes I couldn't look past that. At one point, I heard one of them lament that she wasn't more involved with her physical neighbors. And I was absolutely flabbergasted. I had no idea she felt that way. She was a powerful influencer there. And here she was thinking about, you know, the people that live just right around her. I had been comparing myself with her, and apparently she had been with me, because I had just shared about interacting with my neighbors. And here's the truth that has come clear to me from that experience. Your eyes will be blinded if you choose to focus on comparisons. You will be blinded as to how God views you, and you will be blinded as to how God views the person you are comparing yourself to. Because comparisons make you care more about your image and accomplishments than about the work that God is wanting to do through you. And when we compare, we force ourselves to see ourselves and others as either one of two ways, either inferior or superior. That's the nature of comparison, and that is not seeing with the eyes of God. It is destructive. So back to my story. Finally, one day, I just had enough. I took the bus, and I traveled to a hospital on the outskirts of Jerusalem called Hadassah Ein Kerem. I had been researching it a little bit and discovered that it had a branch of pediatric oncology. And I also saw that they had a program there involving clowns and activities and ways to just lighten the children in that particular department. And I thought, if there's a place for me, I bet it's there. As I mentioned, I have a history with cancer, and I love children. And I thought, yes, this is perfect. Why not? Do you hear what I am seeking at this point? I'm seeking purpose, recognition, meaning. Again, these are not wrong desires. But for me in that moment, my primary motivation was a desire to escape the hiddenness that I found myself in. I was an enabler, and I didn't want to be an enabler. I wanted front lines. When I got to the hospital, I remember being directed several times until I finally found the head of the pediatric department somewhere in the bowels of the hospital. I remember it was just this little room and two women down there. And I just briefly explained my situation, my history with cancer, my love of children, my desire to help and be involved. And you have to understand Israeli culture to really appreciate this, but they were extremely blunt and forthright. They immediately asked me if I knew Hebrew, and I said no. My husband and I had been studying Arabic at the time, and it's almost impossible to study both. And so they pretty much immediately brushed me off as being of no use to them. And me being me and having absorbed some of the Israeli bluntness, pushed back and said, well, don't you have Arab patients as well? Now, I knew that was a very politically charged question, but it was not above me for being pointed in my questions. Plus, I was on a mission and I was out to establish myself. This needed to work out. If I remember right, they affirmed that yes, they do, but they just reasserted that I'm basically of no value to them if I do not speak Hebrew. I got back on that bus and I was angry. I was angry at being snubbed, for one thing, but also hurt that my plans were not working out. I had felt a little bit like Jonah when I went, and I was kind of feeling like I was being spit back out of the whale at this point. The niggling feeling that I had that I was pursuing this for the wrong reason, because I did have a niggling feeling, was perfectly underscored by this rejection. And I realized at that moment that where God wanted me was precisely where he had me. He needed me right then to be an enabler, no matter how unseen. So I went back, and I continued doing what I had been doing. And I just want to say, it's amazing the grace that God gives us when we obey. I was eventually able to, on these days out into the West Bank, I was eventually able to share my cancer story with numerous women who were thirsty to hear stories like this, who were thirsty to hear about God. And I had the privilege of sharing that with them. But to be honest, one of the best things that happened through that whole experience was learning to see the eyes of Jesus upon me. And this was a process. It wasn't just that one experience. I think it was after this that I started sensing that just a nudge to push into a relationship there in the old city, an older lady. And believe me, she was not a pleasant woman to be around. She was pretty jaded with life, and I started pushing into that. And it wasn't always pleasant. It wasn't always fun. But it slowly no longer mattered that I was unseen. Because I started realizing that the answer to my question, am I doing enough, this anxiety, the answer was asking God, what do you want me to do on any given day? And then doing it. And I cannot tell you how much peace that gave me. When you know deep in your heart that you are doing exactly what God wants you to do. The drive to compete, the drive to compare, it just fades away. And it really does. It is a constant blessing to continually place your eyes upon Jesus. I found it to be a delight and an unexpected joy to rest in God's approval. I've talked about a few hindrances to serving in the shadows for myself personally, and I've talked about some aids that helped me. So my hindrances were pride and comparisons, primarily. I'm curious, what hinders you from thriving in the shadows? If you look at your handouts, I have two questions there at the end. What is personally your greatest hindrance? And personally, what is your greatest aid to thriving in the shadows? You can take just a minute and think on that. Maybe write down a couple things. We have a little bit of time. I would love to, if someone is brave enough to share, what is something that has hindered you? What is something that has helped you? Selfishness.
Self-pity.
Sorry?
Self-pity.
Self-pity. Good. Yes. I'm not going to drag this out. I challenge you to ask yourself those questions and to continue asking yourself those questions. And I would like to leave you with the challenge of Colossians 3, 23 and 24. And whatsoever ye do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not unto men, knowing that of the Lord you shall receive the reward of the inheritance, for you serve the Lord Christ. Bless you.
Thank you for listening. All recordings from Reach 2022 are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. To purchase additional recordings from Reach or other Faith Builders events, visit us online at www.christianlearning.org or call us at 814-789-4769.